Private Eye, Part 2 of Glory to God. We left off with Glor just about to tell me what really happened. You will not believe the end of this case. I love this case. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy it like I do.
Because I'm always telling my clients, you can lie to anyone you want. Go ahead and lie to your wife and your church leader, but do not lie to me. Do not lie to your defense. You don't want to lie to us. You don't want us to be surprised at court. It will really backfire on you. So I said, okay, same deal. Don't lie to me. Let's hear it. And he said, that email to Sabrina, I had sent her an email saying that I'd help her. And she said she didn't really have anything for me to do. And then my buddy Kurt came up to me and a few days later and said that he was going to California to visit his dad. And there was a warrant out for my arrest from running away from foster care. So I wanted to get out of Utah because I didn't want to get arrested. So when Sabrina messaged me back later, I said, hey, I'm going to California. And she was like, really? I want to get away from my pimp. His name was Luigi.
Wow.
I want to get away from Luigi. And so can I come with you? And so I asked Kurt and he's like, yeah. So the three of us went to California. Kurt dropped Sabrina and I off at a hotel, and he went to his dad's house. As soon as we got to the hotel, she posted an ad on Backpages advertising that she was there in California offering sex. And she put my phone number, because I had a cell phone, and they waited a little bit. They got one guy to respond to the ad. He came to the motel. Sabrina asked. Sabrina had a phone, but they used Glor's cell phone number as the number in the ad, which is part of the charges.
Sure.
Which is one of the ways they tied him to it. So she asked Glor to leave the hotel room for an hour while she turned this trick. He did. He walked around, waited. And she said, if I need you, I'll text you. Which, think
Seriously?
About that. Yeah, thank
I'm
you.
I'm being strangled or I'm being killed. I'm being forced to do things. Could you hold that thought? I need to send a text.
Yeah, exactly.
And why do we think that we can do that as women? Like
there are so many lessons.
Especially that young.
Exactly. Mm. So many lessons that I have learned from being a PI. I wish I could teach young women.
Yeah.
And that is one of them. Hey,
you don't have time.
You don't have time. Like, you can't, oh, this phone's going to make me safe.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
No, they stomp on it. It's over.
It's exactly.
Knock it out of your hand.
Thankfully, nothing happened to her.
Okay.
But here's what's interesting. Out of that, she turns the trick. She calls Glor and says, okay, I'm done. They come back. She made $100. This just makes me sick.
Yeah.
They get $100. They go to dinner, and then they bought some weed. There goes the $100.
Sure.
And they smoke the weed that night, get high. Hey, great, everything's fun. Then the next day, Kurt comes to pick them up. They have no money. They literally didn't even have money to get gas to come home. Sabrina had to call her mom to have her send money to them so they could get gas money to make it back
and
to Utah.
And Kurt didn't have any money?
Kurt didn't have any money. He guessed I just had enough to get to California to see his dad.
Holy cow.
Thinking his dad maybe would give him some to come home, but he didn't. Thankfully, Sabrina's mom stepped up and got him money and they came home. Man, I hear this story. Another part that's interesting to me. The guy that came to buy the sex from Sabrina, from a minor, she's 17 and a half. They're charging my client with sex trafficking because they say he's sex trafficking minors. Mm-hmm. And the guy that had sex with her, how many counts do you think he faced?
None.
Not one thing.
He's an adult.
Having
sex with a minor.
Yes. And she advertised it that she was a minor. That was part of the ad on the back page.
Wow.
And the feds knew that. So I have trouble with a lot of these things. And they didn't charge her, and they shouldn't have. They should have gotten her in therapy and getting her some help. Then they get back to Utah, do this big sex trafficking sweep, and he gets caught up in it. So I say to Glor at the time, okay, so if I find Sabrina, what is she going to tell me? And he said, if she's telling the truth, she's going to tell you what I told you. I said, okay, I don't have a lot of time, but I'm going to try to find everyone I can. In the discovery, usually the feds, a lot of times in Utah, the U.S. Attorney's Office has been pretty difficult to share discovery, to give us phone numbers. They just make it difficult, just make it harder for us.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, thankfully, they didn't. The prosecutor was awesome. Her name was Holly. I loved working with her. I asked for information. She gave me all the information that she had. The number that they had for Sabrina was right, but the address was down in Cedar City, which is like 3 hours from here.
Mm-hmm.
I went down there, and I would go knock on the door. I went day after day. No one answered the door. I spent a week trying to find Sabrina. She was the biggest witness against us. In the discovery, the feds had interviewed Sabrina. In the interview, she says that he sex trafficked her, that he took her to California and sex trafficked her. So I'm really anxious to know,
what's
that
the true story?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's possible that Gloria was lying, but sure, it did feel like he was telling the truth about that to me.
Okay.
I am digging, fighting like crazy. I finally get someone to answer the door at this house in Cedar. And they say they don't know Sabrina. They've lived there a year and a half. They've never heard of her. And I think they were telling the truth.
Okay.
So I just am relentless calling the number. Finally, I don't know if I wore her down or what, but finally she answers the cell phone. And I tell her who I am. We start talking and she says, yeah. I said, how do you know, Gloria? And she says, I know him. We were friends in foster care. And she had faced a sex charge for solicitation, for selling sex.
Okay.
On the state level sometime before that.
Okay.
So she was scared of the system. And, I mean, you're breaking the law. You know that it's,
yeah,
you're in trouble. So I start talking to her and I said, tell me about the trip to California. She tells me her side of the exact same story that Glor told. And it was literally almost as if she were in the room with us when Glor told me the truth about the trip.
She wow.
She said we went to California. I put an ad on Backpages.
I hooked a ride.
I was running away from my pimp, Luigi. Mm-hmm. And she said, I used Glor's number on the ad on Backpage. I only got one customer. One guy came. I made $100. We went and had dinner and bought some weed and we smoked it. And then we were out of money and I had to call my mom for help. And it was so exact to, I did not tell her anything about Glor's statement. So I knew this is true, that the stories match up perfectly. And I said, well, your statement says that he took you there and he pimped you. And she said, I said, why do you have different stories to the feds than this? And she said, well, they were telling me they were going to send me to prison for prostituting. That really frustrated me. You don't go to federal prison for being a prostitute.
Yeah, but you know what? You're 17.
You're 17.
I didn't know that.
You don't know
I'm
that.
Not even telling you my age.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But I mean, serious. How would you know?
Right. And she didn't know. And I said, I'm so sorry they said that to you. That is not. Like, you can get in trouble at the state level.
Sure.
And you can go to jail and charged with it. Most of the time, that's what they do instead of charging the Johns or the Tricks, which really frustrates me because they should go both ways or just one way. Let's put the pressure on the Johns. And she said that they were threatening to throw her in prison. And maybe I think they were just pressuring her.
Yeah.
I don't think they were even thinking of charging her to put pressure on a state level. I don't. I think this was a game they were playing to get this young girl to talk. And then they threatened to throw her mother was here illegally. Sabrina is Hispanic, and they said, if you don't cooperate with us,
your mom's
going to go back to Mexico.
Yeah.
That's a lot of pressure. How could I blame her?
Yeah.
She said, Glor is a really good guy. I really like Glor. I don't want him to be in trouble, but I didn't know what else to say. So this is not my first rodeo.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that conversation all recorded.
Oh, good.
So now we're a week away from trial, and Randy sets up a meeting. There were actually three prosecutors on the case, two of them that were coming to this meeting, and Randy and his paralegal and myself. So this was in his office, and Randy was behind his desk like the alpha male, and then all the rest of us were like on the other side of his desk, kind of more scrunched up. And Randy that's what's cool about working with Randy, because he doesn't have a big ego, he kind of just sat back. In this one, he kind of just played like the good cop while his paralegal and I were the bad cops. And because he's a nice guy. The paralegal was awesome. She was really like arguing, going through all the messages that I told you about on Facebook and pointing out that, hey, Glor's not involved in these messages talking about trafficking. The only thing that you have is Glor saying, hey, I'm hungry. Can I do something to protect you?
So the paralegal was very, very involved with all
the
details.
She was. I was impressed. She knew the fact. She knew all of the discovery. Most people don't. It seems like I spend a lot of time doing the homework, like reading through it all, and then I kind of feed it to everyone just as we're going to trial. But she was really up to speed. So was Randy. I was impressed. Holly, the prosecutor, says, yeah, but, you know, we've got these statements from Sabrina saying that he had trafficked her. And now there's my cue. I'm in. I like tapped in. So I said, hey, look, here's the thing. I said, I've interviewed Sabrina. I said, I know her statement is very troubling. And I know what she says in there, that Glore pimped her and took her to California. Glore does not even have a car, nor does he even have a driver's license. But yes, they did go to California. And I explained the whole thing. I said, she turned one trick. Yes, she used Glore's phone number on there. I'm not disputing that that is not right. But she's going to take responsibility for that. This was her choice.
Right. She's the one that said, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, she said, I'm going to see what I can get out here. I think they thought they were in California. There are a lot of people, a lot of money. We're going to do great. Yeah. And they were shocked they only got one taker. The prosecutor, she's like, well, I don't know. And I said, look. And I started really coming hard at her. I said, I get it that you guys are planning on a white jury in Utah seeing this black kid labeled as a pimp, sex trafficker. That's like one of the worst things you could label someone.
Absolutely.
And you're just counting on this white jury going, oh, wow, this is horrible. I said, but I promise you, I'm going to bring this out that he doesn't even have a car. That flies in the face of logic of trafficking.
Right.
You can't traffic
if you don't have a car.
You don't have a way to traffic.
Right. Don't have a bicycle.
Right. And I explained the situation that I interviewed Sabrina. I said, it's not at all what she said. And she said, well, why did she say it? I said, I understand. And I had the same exact question. Why did she tell the feds a different story? But you need to talk to your federal agents, because they threatened her that she was going to go to prison for prostituting. And if she didn't play ball with them, that they were going to go after her mother and her mom was going to be deported. So what's a kid to do? Of course she's going to cooperate.
She's 17.
And she said, oh, wow. And then she knew. She's like, wow, this is... And I was really impressed with Holly. She was actually listening to the facts, paying attention. The male prosecutor, he wasn't saying hardly anything. It was mostly Holly leading this. So Randy said, okay, look, we're looking at minimum mandatory on this case. We don't want to take the risk in trial. So why don't you offer us a reasonable plea and we'll take it? And my heart just starts pounding. I'm like, no, this is wrong.
Yeah, what are you doing?
And I was like, I can't. So I can't stop myself. So I said, wait. And this is what's really cool about working with Randy without him having a big ego, is because he doesn't get offended if I jump in and say what I'm thinking. He actually appreciates it. Holly, let me tell you what. I'm on the team here and I'm part of this decision. And we hadn't had a chance to talk about this. I'll tell you what plea we'll take. I said, look, this kid grew up in foster care. He was abused. The reason he was in foster care, then he runs away from foster care because he's not getting enough food even. He's not happy there. And now he's living on the streets, starving, and he's trying to get a damn sandwich. So he reaches out to someone who he knows is turning tricks, like, hey, can I protect you? I said, I get it, it's wrong, but I don't think you'll get a conviction, so here's what I want. I want you to count time served, because now he's been in jail for like a year waiting for this. I said, we'll take a plea that counts time served, and he will not be on the sex offender list. This kid has not had a fair shake in life, and I want to give him his first chance. If he's on the sex offender registry,
he's done.
His life is over as he knows it, and he wants to go to college. He wants to do something with his life. So that is what we will accept. And she looks at me and she said, well, that sounds like a dismissal. And I said, yep, that is what we will accept.
Yeah.
And everyone kind of laughs, and she's like, well, I'm not the lead on this case. So I'm going to have to go back to the office and talk to the lead and see what they're willing to offer. And she turns to Randy and says, I'll call you tomorrow and let you know what the offer is. And I'm feeling pretty good about things. I actually had not even told Randy at this point that here's my fear, and I've seen this happen, that play out a few times, that I tell them what we have, and she could go back and say, hey, they have, like, our main witness says that she only said it because she felt threatened by the feds. And I told her where to find her now. I said, this is where you can find her. I'm helping you guys out, because that's how it's supposed to work.
Right.
And Holly had been very good with me, so I had no hesitation in cooperating with her. What they usually do is she would tell the agents, and the agents then go find Sabrina, and they say, hey,
you
changed your story. And so they pressure her again and get her to roll over again. I know this sounds kind of crazy, but it happens.
Sure it does.
And so then they put her on the stand thinking, we got her to say everything we want. But I didn't tell the lawyers on purpose Hey, I got an ace in my back pocket. This is not my first rodeo. I've got it recorded. So if you do that to this little girl, and I think I say little because she seemed just, she was a 17, kid.
17, yeah.
If you do that to her, we're going to pull that recording out and we will impeach her testimony. So we're going to win either way. So I was very confident that we could win. As soon as I got her statement, I was confident. Do I want to take the risk? No, I really don't.
Right.
But if we have to, I think we can win it.
Okay.
So the next day, I'm waiting to hear what offer we get. Randy calls me and he says, and he's kind of laughing. He goes, hey, he said, they're not offering us anything. What? I couldn't even believe it.
Yeah, like, what does that even mean?
No plea. Not only are they not going to do the dismissal like I suggested, but they aren't even offering any kind of plea, which is almost unheard of when we had a relationship that good with Randy and Holly.
Right.
And it was so out of the blue. I was like, what?
Yeah.
What happened? And he said, well, and he's kind of laughing and he goes, you know, Holly asked, because this is the first I'd met her. And he said, she called and she's like, hey, what's your investigator's name? Is it Pam? And Randy's like, yeah, that's her. And she said, well, when I went to the prosecutor on the case, I told her what your investigator said and how strong she was about it and that she was confident that you guys would win. And after I heard it, I thought we should really discuss this, that maybe we don't want to go to trial. And so I told the lead prosecutor on it all about it. And she said, who is that investigator? A woman? She's blonde? What's her name? Because she told me, if that's Pam, we don't have to worry about that. Because a federal judge actually made a federal ruling that says that Pamela is not credible. Right? And Randy was like, what? And he goes, you know what? I'm going to have to ask Pamela about that. My guess is it's about that big case that just happened. I will find out what's up. And she said, because she's not credible, we are not offering any plea, we're going to trial. So Randy tells me this. Man, my blood's boiling. I'm so mad.
Oh, I said, I was like, fight mad.
Yeah, I said, okay, who is that prosecutor? And I knew it. He named the prosecutor. She was one of the prosecutors that I had just done the trial with where we had just kicked their butts.
Gotcha.
Biggest case in the state, and they felt like we had really beaten them.
Uh-huh.
And she didn't like me. I didn't like her.
Right. No love lost.
No love lost at all. None of the prosecutors and I, we did not have good feelings towards each other. And I said, oh, really? I said, okay, look, Randy, this is personal against me. Mm-hmm. I said, first, let me explain what it was. I said, that's true. There is a federal ruling that says that. It was involving that case, which is the biggest case in the state of Utah. In the middle of that case, I came upon evidence that showed that the feds had seized privileged information of my client in that case, which means they had seen emails, they had seen every correspondence that my client had with every attorney that he had.
Against the law.
Exactly. That is so privileged, so sacred. I know a case in Chicago where they had seen one privileged email, and because of the one, the judge dismissed the entire case.
Right.
And in this case, they had seized literally over 5,000 emails.
Oh, you've got to be kidding.
I am not kidding you. And the feds had access to it. And we will go through that case another day.
Okay.
But I was the person that found that. I was the investigator that discovered that the feds had access to that. And it turned into a hearing where it was essentially me against
the world.
Yeah. The federal prosecutors, the FBI, mm-hmm. the IRS agents, everyone. Mm-hmm. And at first they denied that they had seen them. Then they admitted that they saw them. And it was kind of like Bill Clinton saying, I smoked, but I didn't inhale. Uh-huh. They said, okay, we saw the emails, but we didn't read them.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. So yeah. I was like, bull crap. Of course they read them. This was a hugest case. So it was my testimony against all the rest of them. At that hearing, if the judge ruled in my favor that I was correct, that they had seen it, that whole case would have been dismissed. And if he says I'm not credible, compared to all of the prosecutors that say they saw the emails but they didn't read them, if they are credible and I'm not credible, then the case continues. So in his ruling, the judge ruled that Pamela Lindquist, I found her to be not credible. So I explained that to Randy, and I said, but you know what? I'm pretty sure that the court reporter had it wrong, because she must have heard it wrong, because I'm pretty sure the judge meant to say, Pamela is incredible.
That's hysterical.
So Randy laughed his head off, and I said, look, Randy, this is obviously something personal at this point between the prosecutor and I, and I will step out of the case to save Glore. Like, you go use another investigator. This is wrong. This is wrong that they're coming after him because of me, because it's really a vendetta against me for winning. And Randy was so cool. He's like, nope, you are my investigator. Let's do it. Get Glore ready for trial. Get him ready to testify. You know, okay, if you want to keep me on the case, you know what? I'm tired. I'm exhausted from the last trial, and I'm sure that lead prosecutor is too, and I kicked her butt a couple weeks ago, but if she didn't have enough of it, I'm ready. I'll do it again.
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, you call him back and you tell him, fine, we're ready. We're going to trial. So he did. So, because we had decided if we're going to trial, they need to hear his voice. They need to know where he was and what was happening. I was like, okay, I'll go to jail and prep him and let him know we're headed to trial. So I hang up. I'm feeling really guilty. About an hour and a half later, I get a call from Randy, and he says, hey, have you gone to jail yet? And I said, not yet. I was just going to leave. He said, well, I want to come with you. All right, let's go. And he said, because guess what? They dismissed the case. I want to be there when we tell him.
You're kidding. They came back.
They came back. An hour and a half later, they called. I think they were hoping
that he would excuse you.
Yeah, exactly. And when he said, no, we're ready. We're moving ahead to trial. So they dismissed the case. And I just giggled. I was laughing. I was like, this is so awesome. This is so awesome. She knew I was going to kick her ass again.
Yes, exactly.
You think I can't do it again? Yeah, I'm tired, but I'll do it.
Yeah.
I will muster the strength from somewhere. Yes. I'll get it. So it was the most awesome thing. We went to jail. And as we're walking in, Randy says, okay. And they had us in the same professional booth. So I don't want to tell him right off. Okay. He said, let's just talk to him for a minute. And then I want to tell him. I said, okay, you got it. So we walk in and sit down. I'm sitting across from Glore. And Randy's sitting in between us. Glore's all shackled. And he said, how's it coming? And are we getting? And I said, yeah. Actually, it's coming really well. I interviewed Sabrina. And she said exactly what you said. Same story. So we're okay, Glore. She's a good friend. She's a good person. I like Sabrina. And he said, yeah, I'm really glad she told the truth. And wow, this is good news. And I said, in fact, it's so good that, and I looked at Randy, and Randy's like, yeah, Glore, it's so good that they've dismissed your case. It was one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Oh.
Glore, he tipped his head back to the heavens and said, thank you, God. I knew you were going to help me. And tears just rolled down his face like instantly. And he's like shackled, and it's hard for him to lift up to wipe the tears even. He has to tip his head down so he can wipe his tears. And he looked at me and he said, thank you. Randy said, hey, this is Pamela. Like, this is her work.
She did this for you.
It was so cool. So gracious of Randy to give me credit. Right. And Glore was just crying and thanking both of us. Like, thank you both so much. Oh, I knew it. I knew when I turned my case over to God that he would help. And I was like,
bless
it was so sweet. And he's such a good kid. And I said, Glore, look, this is your second chance at life. What are you going to do? We're going to get you out like within hours here. And he said, I want to go to college. I really do. I want to get registered for school. I want to get a good job. I want to live a good life. And I said, look, if you get out there and you are hungry, call me. Yeah. I will buy you a sandwich.
Yes. I'll get you a gift card.
Yes. You will. I will feed you.
Yes.
And what's really cool is he got out and he really did call. We have been friends. We've gone to lunch a few times. I've taken him to lunch, and he was going to school and he had a job. I was so proud of him, and I was so proud of our system. It worked.
Good.
Sometimes it really works.
It does.
Kind of funny because, side note, after we got the dismissal on Glore's case, word got out that I had gotten a dismissal for him from all those pimps that had been arrested.
Oh, yeah.
And so
were they calling
you? They were calling to hire me. And it was really funny because, like, one guy, I went and met with one guy, and he was a pimp.
Uh-huh.
And the attorney was, she was telling me, just so you know, he has 3 1-year-old children. And I said, oh, you have triplets? No, they're not triplets.
Three different women.
Oh, my gosh. Oh. He didn't even have an apartment, didn't have a house. He was couch surfing. I said, oh, my gosh. And I said, first thing we're going to do in this case is talk to the prosecutor about getting you a vasectomy. That should be part of our plea deal on this case. And I had to tell him and the next pimp that called, Luigi, actually. You remember had been Sabrina's pimp?
Yeah, Sabrina's.
Luigi hired me. And before he hired me, I said, hey, look, you need to know I'm really good at what I do, but I don't do magic.
Right.
It's my job to find the truth. So if you were a pimp, and I had information that he was, and I said, if you were really pimping, you might want to save your money on me and just work out a plea. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not cheap. And
I don't lie.
I'm not going to lie. It's my job to find the truth. And if the truth is that you were sex trafficking and pimping girls out, I can't change that.
Right.
I can't even cover it up. It's so my job to find the truth. And he's like,
fire you?
Oh, no. Fire you? You don't need to. Yeah. The other guy, that after that speech, he was done with me.
Yeah.
But Luigi's like, oh, no. And Luigi had, so funny, he had what you would expect a pimp to have, I think.
Uh-huh.
He had a tattoo of a kiss on his neck.
Oh, wow.
I know, it's so gross.
Yeah.
But he hired me, and I did my investigation, and it showed that he was pimping girls, and he was actually not from this country, so part of our plea was that he served time, and the minute he serves his time, he goes back to his country. And he was so mad. Like, what? Well, how can they do this? I said,
because you're guilty.
I told you.
Yeah.
Hey, if you did this, we don't even need to waste our time fighting. And anyway, so that was the case. I ended up, for just a short time, I was kind of the PI to the pimps. And one of the lawyers on the case kept singing that song, like, it's hard out here for a pimp.
Yeah.
And you try to make your money for the rent. It was a crazy case. But things worked out the way they should.
Good.
It's one of my favorite cases.
It is. When you first talked about the sex trafficking case, I was not sure.
Yeah.
I had a student that had been trafficked here in the Valley.
Yes.
And it was pretty awful. Intense. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is a horrible thing.
Yes. And middle school, they're babies. Yeah.
They are babies. And 13. I do not take any of that stuff lightly.
So when we decided this, I was like, oh, I don't know. But
Yeah. Good.
So the people that needed to get caught did.
Yes, and
the one that was just hungry.
So he got
his life back.
He got out to go and sin no more. So
thank you. Yes. Oh, thank you.
So thank you. Thank you for listening to Pamela's Private Eye.